When we more clearly define our deliverables or the products or services we offer, it makes it easier for you to be known for something. So that if you have a great experience with a client, they're going to want to refer you to their friends. They just need to know what to refer you for. Otherwise, if I just say yes to everything always, then it becomes, hey, you should really talk to Wes. I mean, he's a nice guy. He does good work, but I'm not really sure what all he does.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the Brand New You Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you build your brand and boost credibility in your career. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today's guest is Wes Gay, the chief guide at Wayfinder, a story brand certified agency. Wes is a TEDx speaker, a Forbes contributor, and a certified story brand guide and copywriter who helps brands use the power of story to create a clear and compelling message for their employees and customers. Wes, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Brand New You Show.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for having me.
It's awesome to have you on. I've wanted to have you on for a long time for a lot of different reasons. But one, you have a really great story that I know is going to resonate. But before we get into your story, I have one question that I like to ask all of my guests, which is, if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
That's tough. That is a tough one. I'd be tempted to kind of answer your question without answering your question. I would say either, I'm going to go broad here. I'd either say somewhere like Spain or Italy. And the reason is that gives me an out to be diverse. If I want to go to the beach, I'll say Italy, because then I can go to the beach or I can go skiing in the Alps. I can enjoy incredible food. I assume it's incredible. I've never been. I could probably go tour the Ferrari factory or something. Even though I'm a Disney World annual pass holder, I mean the actual Italy, not the Italy pavilion at Epcot.
You know, you got started in your career and the path that you're on because, let's be honest, you didn't always run an agency. So let's go back a few years. Let's talk a little bit about your career path and how did marketing come into play? And, you know, what were you doing, say, 5-6 years ago?
5-6 years ago, I was in working in churches. So I actually started right in college, out of college, working in the nonprofit world and the churches. And so, you know, my title ranged everything from media to marketing to communications to I was always the default IT guy. But it was because I was usually the only guy under 40 on staff. And they're like, oh, he's in his 20s. He's clearly an IT expert. So I unfortunately fixed a lot of printers and pretended to fix a lot of copiers and all that. So kind of was that default, you know, kind of marketing, messaging, media, communications. I did event planning. So that's what I was doing 5-6 years ago, kind of on that path. And so in 2014, I was working at a church here in the Atlanta area where I live now. And I'd started going to seminary to get a master's thinking, I don't really love the track I'm on right now, or I'm always kind of in this media communications role. I want to use what I'm good at in another way. So let me go get a master's degree from a seminary and kind of pursue the more ministerial route, so to speak. And that was the path I was on until I got fired in 2016. You know, the best way I can describe that is I was a casualty of somebody else's insecurity, of my executive leader's insecurity. This all kind of tees up to where I am now, because we were living at my mother-in-law's house. We had a almost 18-month-old at the time. My wife was pregnant with our second one. We had lived in a house the church owned. They kind of said, hey, you got to get out because we're having a new pastor come in town. You got to leave. He wants the house. So we had about 3 weeks to find a new place. Couldn't find one based on the meager salary that I was making at the time. Moving my mother-in-law. We're living there. That happened. That one church went to another church a month later. 2 months after I got there, they decided, you know what, this was actually a brand new position that we don't like having it on our staff, so we're just going to terminate the position. Here's a 3-month severance, 5 weeks before our second one was born. So that kind of sent me on this spiral, as you can imagine, two really difficult situations almost back to back, thinking, okay, I thought this is what I was supposed to do. This is what I feel like I'm good at. I now have a master's. I've invested in the education. I've put in the time. Let me go find something else. So then I went through, like a lot of folks, you know, applying for everything I could. I mean, I still have a folder in my email of jobs is what it's called. And I looked back a few months ago and there were 40, 50, 60 applications I probably sent through. And it's everywhere. Churches all over the country, search firms, multiple Chick-fil-A positions because I live in Atlanta and there's a Chick-fil-A every 17 feet, it seems like. But yeah, so applied everywhere. Couldn't do anything. I could not get anything. And at one point I thought, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Like, I cannot get a job. You know, I'm constantly changing my LinkedIn, looking for side projects, doing everything I can. And just, man, nothing was working out. It was hard. It was really, really hard. I had a couple little freelance things I do here and there, but nothing sustainable. Still had no end in sight in terms of getting our own place. now we had a 2-year-old and a, you know, 5 or 6 month old. And it's like, I don't know what we're going to do. This is bad. This is really bad.
So what was the turning point for you? I mean, how did you take that situation, which many people would find very desperate, if you will?
It was.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would lose faith at that point. It's, you know, at some point in there, how did you take that moment and decide, okay, I know I got to pivot to do something, but how do you get the courage to do that, to go in a different direction?
I think sometimes what later seems to be courage in the moment is just a panicked act of desperation. Like I just got to do something. Because at some point it becomes, I'm just trying everything and nothing is working. It was fall of 2016, and that was the first I had heard of this copywriter certification training that Donald Miller was doing with StoryBrand. Now, I had been following StoryBrand for about a year at this point, and then I know a guy who was a ghostwriter for John Maxwell here in Atlanta. And Don Miller had come and done a private workshop with the StoryBrand or with the John Maxwell folks. So I kind of had an understanding of the framework, and the podcast had just launched too. And so I had looked at the email and I thought, man, I'd love to do this, but it's $5,000. We've got one credit card that's maxed out. We can't pay it down because we're not making any money. We're barely scraping the minimum payments. It's rough. And so I was actually on my way to the Chick-fil-A corporate office to meet with two different folks about millennials in the workplace. But anyways, I'm driving around Atlanta. I'll never forget. I was on 285. If you're familiar with Atlanta, it's the big bypass, you know, in the city. And I'm driving and my wife calls me, and she was a virtual assistant for a guy in New Orleans. He had been following StoryBrand too. She sees the email in his inbox about this copywriter certification. So she calls me while I'm driving to the Chick-fil-A home office. And she says, have you looked at this? I said, yeah, I saw it. She said, I think you should do it. It's like, it's $5,000. She's like, well, we've got another credit card. We'll just put it on that for now, which is crazy. Don't tell Dave Ramsey. But I said, are you sure? She said, you know what? We've tried everything else. Nothing's working. She said, at this point, I think you can do this. You should go try it. You've always been a good writer. And at that time, I didn't actually know what a copywriter did. I had no idea. But I knew I was a pretty good writer from the perspective of being able to take a complicated idea and communicate it in a way that was simple, but also communicate it in a way that people understood it. And then if people just kind of got it. And I've been following Don Miller since the mid-2000s when he wrote Blue Like Jazz. I was familiar with his work, familiar with StoryBrand. I thought, okay, I'm going to have this certification. They were talking about they would send you leads, et cetera. I thought, I'm going to do this. So on a Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, I put it on a credit card and think, great, I just spent $5,000. What am I going to do? The room block they had near the venue was booked, so I couldn't get a discount on a room. I'm scrambling to find a room, and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to get up super early Monday and drive the 4-hour drive from Atlanta to Nashville to get there in time to start, so I don't have to spend money Monday night or Sunday night on a hotel. Sunday afternoon, I think I went to the grocery store and bought bread and peanut butter and bananas. I didn't want to spend the money on jelly so that I could make sandwiches in the room and not have to buy breakfast. And have, because I didn't know if they're going to provide meals. I didn't say. So I was like, well, at least I'll have a peanut butter sandwich and a banana for lunch. And so I get up, drive, I get there, you know, sit down. And when the first hour and a half, I literally thought, this is the right place for me. I'm in the right room.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously we're talking StoryBrand. You and I know what that is, being certified guides. For those who don't know, can you explain what StoryBrand is?
StoryBrand is a marketing formula based off a thousands-year-old framework for telling stories, right? Our brains are wired to be captivated by and respond to stories. So why not take a formula of storytelling and use that to create clarity in our marketing and our messaging? Too often, companies are really confusing. They're vague. They're unclear. You just have no idea what they offer. You don't know what they sell. You don't know how to do business with them. This framework gives us a clear path to decide, okay, what do we need to say in our marketing and our messaging that's going to matter to the people who hear it so that they want to do business with us? So the StoryBrand framework is a 7-part formula. And if you read the book, Building a StoryBrand, or go to a live workshop, you'll hear, I mean, once you know the formula, and it's not hard, I don't want to give it away here. I think your listeners should go buy the book. But once you hear the formula, you're going to be watching a movie. And you're going to be able to talk about it. You're like, oh yeah, that's this, or this is the hero, this is the guide, or whatever. I mean, you're going to know the formula, and it'll help you make better decisions in what you say in your marketing and in your messaging.
So talk to me about, you go to this class, you just spent what probably feels like the last $5,000 you have, even though you didn't have it.
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't even mine. It was the banks.
Right. And you come away, you have a framework that you can use to help companies, you know, with their copy and their copywriting. And you started a business with it. Give me a taste of what that was like, your first few clients after you got a framework, you know, it works, but then what do you do?
You know, I get home on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. I'm like, crap, I just spent basically $5,100 by the time you had gas in a hotel room. And I stayed at the worst motel in Nashville, Tennessee. I figured out once I got there, I pulled up and I thought, I may not survive tonight. So I get home and I thought, I don't know what to do. So they had a Slack channel for anybody who had gone through the live workshop. And there was a group in there called Peer Feedback. And I thought, great. I'm officially certified now. That means I have authority. I can help them. I'm just going to start answering questions. So I did. People would ask for feedback and I'd say, hey, I'd fix this, tweak that, et cetera. And I made sure my profile said I was a StoryBrand certified copywriter. I would DM people. And it's one of the first people I engaged with in a private conversation was a lady who was a web designer. And she said, hey, I've got a client who's been to the StoryBrand Live workshop. She's all in. I'm designing a website, but I'm not a writer. She's not a writer. Can you help us? I said, sure. So we get on a three-way call and the lady said, well, what's your pricing? I didn't know, man. I'd never done this. So I just picked a number and she was like, okay. And I like my jaw hit the floor and I was sitting on my mother-in-law's couch because we still lived in her house. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's like almost a month's salary of any job I've ever had. That's just ridiculous. And so she said, yeah, we get started. And I'll never forget when I had our first kickoff call with this client. And we were 12 minutes into the conversation. And I said, what are your dominant revenue streams? I said, how do you make money? And she's like, well, we have five areas. The number one area makes 80% of our revenue. And the other four make up the other 20%. I said, wait a second. $4 million a year comes into one way. And you've got four services that only do $250,000 each. She said, yeah. And I said, why wouldn't you just do more of thing number one so you could grow your business more? And she literally says, do you really think so? She said, I've thought about that for years and cannot decide. I think you're right. We should look into that. I'm like, she's owned this business for 25 years, really technical, really scientific. She's a really smart engineer lady. I've known this lady's business for 12 minutes and she's listening to what I have to say. This is nuts. But what it told me was it was things I knew all along that how I could bring value to people. But because frankly, I was still younger, I didn't have the authority that people wanted to pay for in order to help them with their business. So what I did is it's what I call delegated authority, where I went and got the certification. So people who are looking for that authority see that certification and go, that's what I need. You can help me. They never asked about my background. I mean, literally I went 6 or 8 months doing this thing full time, doing really well before anybody ever asked me my background in a sales call. And it was one guy, he wanted $500 worth of work and asked for my resume and my credentials. I'm like, you're not asking for much. Like, you don't need my resume to make a decision here. You either like me or you don't, is what I told him. Mm-hmm. But it's like, nobody asked because they saw the authority that I have in that certification and they listened to me through that lens. I think one of the biggest frustrations with people like me who feel like they should make a career pivot but feel stuck, it's because they know they can bring more value than they already are. But the problem is the way we're being viewed by those around us. Like I was an IT guy, tech guy, production guy. So when I used to work at live events here about 10 years ago, I was viewed as the guy who would go change batteries on a microphone or set up a PowerPoint presentation. And that was the only value that people thought I brought. So they could only see me through that lens. But when I was able to change how people saw me, I didn't change that much. How other people saw me changed, making it easier for me to pivot and make that shift into something that was going to be more of what I wanted to do and frankly, what I'm better at.
One of the things that I've noticed, and I've been very tempted, if you will, by this, and I know people who are tempted by this, but when a client comes to you and says, I know you have the StoryBrand framework and I want that, but I also want this. And I also want that. How important is it for people who are getting started out to really decide what it is that they're going to do and then stick to that? Like, how important is that to growing your business?
That's a great point. So years ago, I heard an executive at Chick-fil-A speak at an event, and he talked about everything in life falls in one of three buckets. The first bucket is, what are the things you can control? And then what are the things that you can influence? And then his third thing was, what are the things that you can neither control nor influence? So I've kind of lived with that framework in mind. So when I started my business, I basically adapted that idea to me and said, okay, instead of saying, what can I control? I say, what is it that I will do? If the client's right, I will always do these deliverables. These are the things I will do. And the kicker is if the client's right. And for me, that is, do they fit kind of in the right budget? And are they a smart, reasonable adult? We don't have to want to go on an extended vacation, you know, together, vacation, our family's vacation together. Are they reasonably intelligent and reasonably, and just a reasonable person? Those two things I can work with, right? So I'll always do things in that bucket. But then I also know, and this is where most people say, they say, I will do these things. And they say, here are the things I will not do. Like for me, I have less than zero desire for our agency to ever do social media content creation and management. There are too many people who are great at it. I got a friend of mine, he runs an agency. They're killer. I'm just going to refer everybody to that guy because I have no desire to do that. They're too good. And I know I would lose every time if I was up against him because he's just really good. I personally early on decided it is not worth my time to do web design and development. I know how to do it. I've done it. I'm okay at it. But it takes me far too much time and far too much mental anguish for me to produce an average product when I can pay somebody to do great work. And that frees me up. Not only, and this is the thing I think for people just starting out when you're making a pivot, is it's not just about the amount of time that you save. It's about the mental space you save. It's that just knowing that is totally off your plate. You don't have to think about it. So that's great. So most people are just kind of limited to two buckets. Here are the things I will do. Here are the things I won't do. But for me, like that guy said, here are the things you can influence. For me, it's what are the things I can do? I may not always do them, but if the client's right, if the budget's right, and if it's something I feel like I want to do for somebody because I really like them or they're a friend, or early on it was, hey, rent's due. Hey, I got to pay this credit card back. I took on one website design project when I first started. It was the second client I got, and it was awful. I hated doing every second of it. I was always super nervous. I felt really insecure, and I thought, this is miserable. Why am I putting myself to this misery? Running your business is supposed to be fun. This is awful. That was 2.5 years ago. I don't even touch my own website anymore. I just forget it. Like, I have a team that'll do it. And I would say, too, it's making sure you find good partners that you're comfortable to refer people to. Because I think sometimes there's a challenge of thinking about, okay, if somebody comes to me, this thing that I could do, but I don't really want to do, it's better if I have somebody to refer them to so that when they have a good experience with this person I refer them to, they hopefully they trust me more as a result.
Because I know that free is your favorite four-letter word. I'm curious, outside of the Slack channel, which you mentioned already earlier, how are other ways initially that you were getting leads or finding, you know, generating leads or finding clients?
Well, frankly, early on, it all happened for me in that Slack channel. And it was not only finding individual clients there who needed my help, but it was also finding specifically web designers. But for me, a web designer is somebody who runs in parallel to what I was doing at the time. I was a copywriter. I don't design. Web designers typically aren't writers. So I was looking for people who I call gatekeepers to more clients. So that's who I partnered with. And then it became referral sources and connection points. And I could take clients to them. They could bring clients to me, et cetera. To go back to your point, when we say no to stuff and we more clearly define our buckets of the deliverables or the products or services we offer, then it makes it easier for you to be known for something. So that if you have a great experience with a client, they're going to hopefully want to refer you to their friends. They just need to know what to refer you for. Otherwise, if I just say yes to everything always, then it becomes, hey, you should really talk to Wes. I mean, he's a nice guy. He does good work. I'm not really sure what all he does. That's not really compelling, as opposed to saying, hey, Wes understands the StoryBrand framework. He's a great copywriter. He really helped us on rewriting our website. You should call him about your website. That's something concrete that they can anchor to. So for me, long-term, it's been, how do I do more of that kind of stuff to where I just, people can understand, like, what are you, not only what are they hiring more for, but for great clients, how do they refer me to somebody? So initially it was that, there's a lot of referrals. You know, I know because I got in early to the whole StoryBrand certified thing, there was only like 10 of us trying to take clients. So there was low competition and high need. And so I just worked really hard. I was actually the first one to become full-time just doing this thing, just working with StoryBrand clients. Now there's, I don't know, 400 something people certified across around the world or whatever, but So I do realize I'm not naive. I know some of that came in early, but it was also about trying to be really intentional in going after those kinds of clients and not only looking for individual clients, but looking for those gatekeepers who had access to multiple prospects.
You put out a decent amount of content. How much do you think the content you put out into the world has influenced or impacted the amount of business that you see?
I wish I had a better answer than I don't know. But I think if nothing else, it helps because, I mean, it's the world you're in. It's personal branding. I built my business and continue building on providing value, right? When I get home from that live work, from that server certification, I wake up on Wednesday morning and think, great, I just spent $5,000. What am I going to do? All I could think about was early in my career, I worked for a leadership training organization. We used a lot of concepts from John Maxwell, like a lot of leadership training people do. And one of the things John Maxwell always says is always look to provide value. So I thought, great, that's going to be the foundation of how I operate. I'm just going to look to how can I provide value to people who are my targeted audience? Just give stuff away. So that's what I did. I gave away a ton of free stuff, like free insights, free help, whatever. And that was not everybody became a client, but a lot of people did. And then it became a thing of building. So I know early on it really made a difference. I think now it's more about continuing to be that guy who's just going to provide value and answer people's questions.
What do you say to those people who will tell you, well, if I give away too much, nobody's going to want to do business with me anyway?
I mean, I would say that's baloney. Like, there's a reason people pay Seth Godin $150,000 to do a keynote speech. I've heard him speak. He's not going to tell you anything wildly different than it's in his books. But the thing is, if you provide value to people, you'll always be valuable. And being valuable absolutely has a price tag. I get people saying that. I think the problem with that is, though, is you're assuming that everybody you give free stuff away to is going to have the time or the desire to do the work themselves. You're going to have people who just take with it and run with it. You're going to have people who pay more. I mean, you look at any person, big personal brand, Michael Hyatt, Jeff Walker, Ray Edwards. I mean, all these guys are doing, Amy Porterfield, all these folks doing really well. They all have free content they put out with podcasts and videos, et cetera. They have low price content, and then they have really expensive content, and they have people buying all of it. One of the people I interviewed when I was with Forbes was the chief HR officer at the time, 30-year career at that point in HR. Super nice guy. One of the things he said was, when it comes to leadership, that used to be that knowledge was the currency of leadership. Like, the more you knew, meant more likely you were to be in leadership. He said, now we're in an age where if there's something your subordinates don't know, they'll probably just Google it. Like, they just pull out the device they have in their pocket and they'll learn the same knowledge that you have. They may not have the same wisdom. He said, so now the challenge for leaders is, we used to have this clenched fist of leadership. He said, but now we have to live with an open hand and be more generous with what we know. Because if they don't hear it from us, they're going to hear it from somewhere else. And it's one of those things for me is, I'm going to kind of try to model that on my own business of, how can I live open-handed in terms of being generous and just giving stuff away? Because, you know, it doesn't take long to shoot a video. I can shoot a video on my iPhone in about 3 or 4 minutes, edit it in 5 or 6 minutes, post it on LinkedIn. I took 15 minutes max, right? It doesn't take long. But if it's one of those things where over time it helps other folks, and if it drives business my way, great. But otherwise, I want to make sure people aren't getting ripped off in their by spending their marketing dollars.
Yeah, I've seen some of your videos on LinkedIn. I like them, by the way.
Thanks.
One of them, and this is going to be the last question I ask you before we dive in, I want to talk about your agency. And it's going to sound kind of oddball and maybe out of place here, but I liked it. So I want to get in there because it's important, I think, from a story brand mindset standpoint. But talking about wisdom, you had a video not long ago where you talked about how Blake Shelton on The Voice is one of the better judges out of all the ones that are there. What is it about Blake that makes him a better judge, do you think, than the other ones?
Well, I've said this for 2 years, and it's been a video I've been meaning to make, and I always miss the audition season of The Voice. I love The Voice. But I like, and if you watch, Blake Shelton and Adam Levine are the two coaches who have been there since day one. And I've watched The Voice every season for the last 5 or 6 years. So I've watched 8 or 10 seasons. And I noticed this after I went through StoryBrand. Is Blake Shelton, when he turns around for a singer, it's always like, wow, you're incredible. I love this about your voice. I'd love to help you become a better version of who you are. It's kind of his overarching pitch. And that's why non-country singers go to his team. People walk in knowing, if Blake turns around, I'm going to pick Blake. Like, it's because of how he's positioned himself. Other coaches will say, you should be on my team because this is what I love. And they'll spend 30 seconds talking, the coach talks about themselves. But that singer is not there to make the coach feel better. That singer is there to further their career or pursue this dream they've had. And what I was saying on the LinkedIn video was, so Blake, I think, acknowledges that and positions himself that way, which is why top talent comes to him. That's why he's won six of the last 16 seasons. I mean, he's killing it. I also think if you look from his career, his first 10 years of his career, he had, I don't know, 8 or 10 number one hits. Since The Voice came on, he's more than had double the amount of number one hits and way more top 10 singles. His popularity skyrocketed. He's funny, he's engaging, whatever. But I think at the end of the day, he's positioned himself as a guide on that show, and people respond to it, and that's what they're looking for. Same thing is true in business. People are looking for somebody to come along and say, I know what you're trying to do. I know what you're trying to accomplish. I'm going to work hard to help you get to where you are going to go. I mean, he literally said one time, I couldn't decide if I wanted to turn around because I was trying to decide, is this the type of artist I want to help for the rest of their careers? Right, those kinds of things, as opposed to, I'm super passionate about my team. Join my team. I guess, who cares, right? We're all trying to, everybody, for whatever it is, whether it's a multi-billion dollar B2B deal or whether it's a, whether you're selling coffee mugs, like everybody's trying to solve a problem, and you need to tell people how you help solve their problem and then make that really clear. And then people are going to be more likely to do business with you.
You positioned yourself initially as story brand copywriter, then story brand guide, and now you are running a certified story brand agency called Wayfinder.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, how did you make the decision to go from, okay, I'm really good at doing these things individually with one-on-one people. Now I think I want to scale and go that next step. How did you decide to do that?
Yeah. So it's something I had thought about for a while, and I just wrestled with, you know, what's the path? Like, do I keep kind of being the Lone Ranger Maverick guy? Or how do I need to transition? What can I do to build this thing that's more sustainable? Also, to be a place where, you know, we can offer more services and make it a little bit easier to target higher tier companies. Because I came to a fork in the road where I said, okay, if I go this way, then I start an agency and, you know, kind of, I want to do things differently than your typical agency model. I knew that. I said, or I go this way and I spend a boatload of time trying to build myself up to the point where I could get those higher, you know, those bigger clients or the bigger companies or expand more services. And I thought, you know what, let me go the agency route because I think that's going to give me a little more freedom. And I think it's going to give me a great opportunity to build a business and kind of build a brand. I also knew how hard it is to be on your own as kind of an independent consultant type, especially when people are coming to you and you're having to project manage and kind of coordinate things that are outside of your skill sets or bring on partners, white labeling, et cetera. And I thought, I also want a place where some other guys that I've worked with can have a spot where they can come in and then stop doing some of the things they don't enjoy doing. Like, I've got one person who really doesn't like doing the sales part of it, but loves the copywriting part of it. You know, I've got somebody else who prefers the sales side and not the copy side. So it's trying to build it out to where, how can I kind of create a place where they can come in and kind of centralize resources and make it a little bit easier for everybody, to make it easier to scale. So I knew I wanted to do things differently. I've had to play cleanup, it feels like, behind a lot of agencies who have wasted a lot of people's money. For so long, there's been a lot of people, agencies running around saying, hey, you have to have this one thing in your business. And they usually say that because that's what they're trying to sell. So I just knew I wanted a little bit different model where we come in and say, okay, let's make sure we're saying the right things first and getting the words right and the messaging correct and all that's really focused on your ideal customer. And then we'll go figure out how to say it.
So what are the things, products, services that you offer now through Wayfinder?
Yeah. So we try to do everything where we start with the messaging. So what are we going to say? Like, what, before we go doing, you know, writing website copy and email copy or building website, what are we trying to communicate? Who, and we want to do that through the lens of your target audience. So your customers, what is it they're trying to achieve? What are the obstacles they have in place? And then how do we help them get to where they want to go? And that's a truncated version of the story brand framework. And so walk people through that. And then that gives us our messaging foundation. So a lot of brands have, say, brand style or style mm-hmm, guides. Mm-hmm. Think of it as a messaging guide. Here's how we're going to talk about our brand. And here's what we're going to say to our customer. Then from there, we write a lot of website copy, build a lot of websites. Over the Christmas holidays in 2018, my virtual assistant looked at all the projects I had done in my first 2 years in the story brand certified world. And up to that point, I had written about 150,000 words of copy. About half that's a website, and the other half was broken between email campaigns and lead magnets. But write a lot of website copy, And then we do a lot of marketing strategy too. Like once we know what we're going to say, what's the plan for how we're going to say this? Website, lead magnets, maybe it is paid advertising. You know, there's so many ways to get done. So building out that plan. And then we do a lot of, we'll do ongoing email content, like think email newsletters, marketing strategy, coaching, consulting, et cetera. So that's kind of high level of what we do. The things we don't do, we don't do social media content or management. I just don't want to do it.
You could probably imagine I could talk to you about this stuff like all day long, not to mention just story brand stuff in general, but we do have to end it at some point. So I think this might be as good a time as any. So for those people who want to know more about you personally or about Wayfinder, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Check out our website at hirewayfinder.com. That's H-I-R-E wayfinder.com. For parents who have young kids, the name Wayfinder may sound familiar because it's referenced in the movie Moana. I didn't know that until after I picked the LLC, but it is, which is kind of fun. And then you can find me on Twitter. I'm just at Wes Gay. You can find me on LinkedIn, or that and the website are the best places to find me.
Awesome. Any final words, thoughts, tips, words of wisdom, anything like that?
Sure. What are the tactical skills that you were really good at in your career up to this point? And one way to figure that out is to think about what are the things where people would affirm you, but not the outcomes. So I would say, where have people affirmed you in your identity? And they say, you're a great this. Figure out those tactical skills and look at, okay, what are other ways I could apply those, realizing that might be out of your comfort zone, and then just try it. Not everybody's going to have to make a pivot with your back against the wall, because that's an extreme. But if you're looking to make a switch, I'd start there. What have you been good at in the past that you could maybe repackage and leverage to help take you where you want to go?
Awesome. Great advice. Wes, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate, as always, talking with you. I always learn so much, but thank you for taking the time and being a guest on the podcast today.
Hey, Ryan, it's great to be on. And let's not make it another 2 years before you and I see each other again.
All right, we'll try not to do that for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, thanks.
There are so many good takeaways from Wes's story, but two that really stick out in my mind are borrowing other people's authority and becoming known for something. I'm often asked by people considering starting a side business or looking to transition from one career to another, how do they do it when they have no experience? It's a legit question, and there's two potential paths that you can take. The first is to go out and get the experience you need. I discussed this in detail during my podcast with Dori Clark about her book, Entrepreneurial You. This path will take you some time, but it'll give you the experience that others want and that you need. Rather than go into the specifics on how to do this, head back into the archives and check out my podcast with Dori for tips and suggestions on how to make this happen. The second path is the one that Wes took, and frankly, I've taken as well, which is to borrow the authority of others via certification. In our cases, Wes and I both borrowed the authority of StoryBrand via their certification. This path will get you where you want to go quicker, but it usually requires a monetary investment. However, the payback is much faster. The path you choose ultimately depends on where you are in your current situation and how quickly you can move in either direction. But regardless of which path you choose, you must first define what you want to become known for. As Wes pointed out, this is a critical decision point for you as you look at your business or even your future career. Without answering this question, you will not know what experiences to pursue or which certifications to obtain. This is why the first step towards branding yourself, as noted in my book Career Cred, is define. You have to define what you want to become known for. No one else can do that for you. However, once you define this, as Jane Anderson, a personal branding expert and previous guest on this podcast, said to me, once you know what you want to become known for, the key to really boosting your brand is to become known for knowing something. When you are known for knowing something, as Wes points out, things become a lot easier for you. It becomes easier to tell others what you do. It's easier for others to understand what you do, and it becomes easier for people to refer you, whether for business or for a new role. Becoming known for something is the key step towards changing how others see you. It's critical to growing your business and to making a successful career pivot. If you happen to be struggling with this, either as a business owner or a career professional, head over to Amazon and pick up your copy of my book, Career Cred, and get started defining your brand now, rather than waiting until your options are more limited. Thank you, Wes, for being a guest on the show today. It was great to speak with you again, and I thank you for sharing your story with us today. And as for you, loyal listeners, thank you, as always, for tuning in. That'll wrap us up for today. So until next time, I've been Ryan, and I'm out. Today's show was edited and produced by Ryan Logan. The transition music is Holiday in Spain by Roman Dymanoff and Tratiella no Palente by Michelangelo. The intro and outro music, as always, is Pulse by Soundwave. All music licenses for today's show were purchased via pond5.com.